David Paulson. I'm a member of SABRE, the Society of American Baseball Research. Today is Thursday, November 12th, and I'm in Sykesville, Maryland, at the home of Walter Yauss. Okay, Mr. Yauss, how old are you?
I'm 85.
Okay, where were you born?
Well, I'm from Maryland.
Okay, and when did you get interested in baseball?
I've been in baseball, since I've been 15 years old. I played sandlot ball, played Legion baseball, semi-pro, and managed professional ball, and been scouting for 45 years right now.
Okay, what position did you play?
Played center field for Bloomingdale, which was quite a powerful semi-pro ball club. A lot of ex-big leaguers playing with them, and some of the guys I played against at that time and played with was Waller Beal, who was Babe Ruth claimed had the greatest curveball he ever seen. And of course, Babe Phelps, who was with the Brooklyn Dodgers at the time and played in that league with me, the Ballmer Semi-Pro League. I guess I played with Bloomingdale and I played with the Calvert Distillery team and different semi-pro teams around town. Glen Burnie, I played with them too. My career is playing. I played a little minor league baseball when I managed. I played a little bit.
What team was that for?
I played with Seaford, Delaware, and then also West Virginia. These are teams I managed in the minor leagues. Kingsport, Tennessee, and Bluefield, West Virginia. Those were the four teams I managed. When I was with the Orioles as a scout, and they sent me in to manage Bluefield, West Virginia for a month or two,
did you win any pennants as a manager?
No, I didn't win any pennants. At that time, when I look back, I don't think I was qualified to manage actually at the time. But later on, after I got into professional baseball and went to spring training with the Orioles and was around guys like Earl Weaver and George Bamberg, I learned a lot about baseball from them guys.
Okay. In growing up, did you have any particular favorites, players or idols?
Yeah, as growing up, I guess Lefty Grove was one of my big favorites. And later on, Ted Williams, and Ty Cobb, Hack Wilson, they were big favorites of mine. I guess that's, but Ted Williams is probably, in my opinion, the greatest hitter ever lived.
Did you get a chance to get over to Griffin Stadium to see him?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I went to Griffin Stadium and seen Babe Ruth play. I seen Babe Ruth hit a couple home runs one day. I seen Jimmy Fox put on a show. I mean, in batting practice, you wouldn't believe. He hit balls that nobody else could ever dream of hitting up in top of them stands. But I thought it was a great thing at that time when I was a kid to get over to Griffin Stadium and see a few ball games here and there.
Now, how did you get interested or get involved with scouting?
Well, I had this Legion team, and I had two or three outstanding boys on this team, and Paul Richards was the manager of the Orioles. And he wanted these two boys, and he brought me out to the stadium to bring the two boys and work them out. And the Orioles signed both of them, and he gave me a part-time job at the time. And I worked as a part-time scout for a year or two, and then they needed a scout in this area, and they gave me the job, and I went from there. And that's 45 years ago.
This was sometime in the mid-50s?
Yeah, around 1955, I think it was, yeah. And two boys, Barry Chetrone, who went to the big leagues and played in the big leagues, and Danny Welsh was a pitcher, a left-handed pitcher, who got hurt early in his career. But they're the two boys that I got into baseball, professional baseball. I had managed before that. I had managed in the Eastern Shore League when I first came out of the service. I went to Eastern Shore League in Seaford, and then from there I went to Welsh, West Virginia, and managed two professional ball clubs in the minor leagues, and then I got out for a while, and then when Richards came along, I had this Legion team. They were a powerful team, and had these boys playing for me, and he wanted them two boys. And that was before the draft or anything like that. You know, you just went out and got whoever you could get. And I had a more or less an in with these boys, and just signed both of them for the Orioles. And I can say one of them went to the big leagues.
Now, what was your territory that you covered?
At that time, I had, when I first went to the Orioles, I had Delaware, Maryland, West Virginia, and Virginia. They were my states. And I was what they call area scout. And like I say, Chetrone was one of the first boys that signed. I went to the big leagues. And by the next boy, I was signed as responsible for was Steve Barber, who went to the big leagues and was a 20-game winner. So when I first started, I was lucky. I got two good boys. And when you get two good boys like that, you make a few mistakes and nobody says anything.
You got a reputation to start with.
Well, you make a few mistakes and it's all right. That's what happens to a lot of scouts. They make mistakes and then they become negative. And they don't want to sign them. They're scared to sign guys. And that's one thing I never done. I've always been signed up a few goats, but I never became negative. So that's about, I think that's one thing that happens to scouts. They become negative once they make a couple mistakes.
So in your scouting, you probably sort of learned on the job. I mean, you didn't have a mentor, perhaps?
No mentor, but a couple people really helped me. Fritz Meisel, who was a legend here in Ballmer City, played with the Yankees and so on. I rode with him a lot in the car, and he would tell me different things that helped me. And another friend of mine was named John Carey, who was scouting for the Dodgers at the time and also a pitching coach for them. And John and I grew up together, and he helped me a lot to get started and told me some things to do and not to do. So they were two guys that really helped me. But I learned by mistakes.
Now, when you first started with the Orioles as a full-time scout, do you remember what your approximate salary was?
Yes, I do. $4,500 a year. That's what it was. And at that time, I was in a restaurant tavern business, and I could have made $30,000 a year. But I took this job because that's what I wanted to do. And I'm glad I did. Health-wise, it was a heck of a lot better for me to do what I did.
Was that a typical salary for a scout?
Scout at that time? Probably so. Yeah, probably so. $4,500 to start off with. I think they're starting them off now around 20,000, maybe a little more. I'm not sure right now what they start them. But I know at that time, yeah, that wasn't high. It was low. It was pretty low. But that money never meant a whole lot to me. And I always felt that if I got established, then I would make some money, and which happened.
How much did you actually end up getting?
I think I made around 50. 50 or 60, I'm not sure. I think it was about 50 or 60.
Now, when you're scouting, I guess they gave you a per diem or for traveling and food.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, traveling, sure, you get it. Today, the traveling is, I think, in our different organizations vary. I think 31 cents a mile, something like that it is, and $25 a day to eat on, and the motel, whatever the motel is. I mean, that's what it is. You try not to go out of line with the motel if you can.
Now, in your scouting years, did you have any coups or situations where you got someone else, you signed someone who maybe was leaning to another team?
Well, we would, scouting, it's happened a couple of times, and we had a boy down in Virginia named Jesse Jefferson, and this was a big, tall, black boy, and nobody knew anything about him but us. Dick Bowie was my associate scout at that time. And we seen this boy played, and he was outstanding. But he was from a place called Methodian, right outside of Richmond. And we hit him. Nobody knew about him. Dick got to know him and talked to him not to pitch on certain days and stuff like that. And nobody knew about this boy. And when the draft come, we drafted him in the third round. He went to the big leagues. And we hit him in Dick's house 3 days before the draft, and Dick took him up. He lived in Stafford, Virginia, and he went there for 3 days and lived with him so nobody could see him. But there's different things. Yeah, we've had boys at I've been in a boy's house and made him an offer in his kitchen, And we say we offered him $8,000 or something, and another scout who had got in with the family was in the other room listening to everything I said. I didn't know it at the time, but he later on he told me. But I figured something like that happened, and I'd only had so much money to give him, but I knew this guy had been there and everything, so I offered him a lot of more money, and not offered him. I told him, I said, if I could get you $20,000 or $25,000, and I knew this guy had signed for maybe $8,000 or $10,000, already had him signed. And he kind of, he really told me later on, he said, I could have shot you, because I'd already made this guy, and then they come back and told me that I had robbed him. But there's a lot of things that happen, and, you know, you try to hide boys and all. At that time, not so much today. They still do it, but not as much, because you got the scouting bureau today. And the bureau's the one that really turns the players in, and the scouts go out and look at them and try to evaluate them.
Now, when you were interested in a particular player, did you have some sort of budget as to how much you could offer him, or did you have to check with the front office, or how did that work?
Well, first of all, you would probably set a price yourself, but you thought you could sign the boy. And then you would talk to the front office and tell them what you thought you could sign him for, and they would tell you what you could do, what you got to sign with. I mean, that's how it generally works. I mean, and it depends on the scout a lot of times, how much clout he has with the organization, how much money he can get for a guy. I mean, if the scout's well thought of and they respect the scout's judgment and so on, he can get a lot more money for the guy than somebody that maybe a new scout or something.
Okay, now how long were you with Baltimore as a scout?
I think for 19 years. 19 years with Baltimore.
Okay. And other than Steve Barber, who were some of the other players you were
with? Well, Larry Haney, Timmy Norbrook, John Miller, Tommy Phoebus, Jimmy Lehu, Jesse Jefferson. It's some other ones. I mean, I don't think it's too many other ones that got to the big leagues. Oh, let's see, the boy named Brown, I forget his first name, Al Brumley. These are the boys that I was instrumental in getting with the Orioles. I saw a lot of boys that went to the maybe Triple A or something and then never made to the majors, but I got my share.
Now, you were with the Orioles for approximately 19 years.
Mm-hmm.
About how many scouts did they have at that time?
The Orioles only had a full scouting staff, maybe 18, 20 full-time scouts.
And they were assigned to certain areas of the country.
Right, that's right. We didn't have, at that time, they didn't go in as much for cross-checking as they do today. I mean, I think the area scout at that time had a little bit more clout with these organizations than they do today. I mean, that's my thinking anyway.
At that time, did they do much in South Central America and outside mm-hmm. of the country?
No, nowhere near what they're doing today. No, today is a big thing, and that was. I think they did some of it, but some scouts didn't even have, some organizations didn't even have scouts there. And I think today everybody has a scout in these parts of the country, of the world.
Now, okay, so in Baltimore you were there probably till the middle 70s, I guess.
I guess it was something like that.
Now, where did you go after that?
California. Wherever Dalton went, Dalton was the general manager.
Harry Dalton.
And he was my man. When he left, I went with him to California, and when he left California, I went with him to Milwaukee, I went to California from New Orleans with Dalton, wherever he went.
Did you still have the same territory to cover?
He made me a eastern supervisor, east of the Mississippi. He wanted to make me a national cross-check, but I didn't want that job. That job's not for me. But anyway, I had just about the same thing. I was a supervisor for the East Coast, and that's what I wind up with. But the national cross checkers, it's a tough job.
Right. Now with California, who were some of the players you were involved with?
Well, Willie Akins was probably one of them. We got Willie Akins and Paul Hartzell, and Rick Starr from Baltimore here. There's another boy, I can't think of his last name. He put on a big league roster. I was with California 5 years. They're the boys that I got there.
Now, when did the draft come in, approximately?
I think the draft came in around 1965. I think that's when the draft was.
Now, was the scouting bureau set up then or later?
I think later. I'm not sure now.
Now, how did the draft change things?
Well, the draft changed things is the fact that you wouldn't concentrate on any one guy or any maybe two or three guys. You'd have to have contact with a lot of people because you never, if you before the draft, you maybe go in and get in with a boy's family, get to know them, and wine them and dine them and things like that. But then the draft come along, you weren't sure of getting him. You go, somebody else would draft him, and you're done. So that was a big difference there. You wouldn't maybe spend as much time with maybe two or three boys that you really wanted because you weren't sure you weren't going to get them anyway. So I think that's the biggest difference in the draft right there. I don't think the draft has done the job they thought it would, try to equalize talent, because it looks like the teams are spending the money are winning every year.
Was there any kind of incentive set up for scouts, like bonuses or commissions, depending on who they signed or how the player turned out?
The organizations I was with never done that, and I never had nothing like that. If I didn't sign one boy, I still got the same amount of money. And that's, but maybe some organization might do that, but not ours, not the ones I was with.
When you scout in your territory, did you get involved with colleges too?
Oh yeah, yeah. You try to get to know a college coach and be friendly with him, and he might get some information from him that he wouldn't give you somebody else. Maybe to make up for the boy's problems sometimes off the field and so on, which is all important as far as science. I think the boy's makeup and his desire to play baseball and all are very important as far as for him to become successful, and a college coach could give you some of that if you were friendly with him. Yeah, I think you try to get, and of course he'll tell you when certain boys are going to pitch or something, or somebody's hurt. That all helps out to be friendly with a college coach.
Do you have any opinion, is it better to sign a player right out of high school or a college player for the long run?
Oh, I don't know. I think that's a matter of opinion. I think you see the college boy, almost you're going to see Johnny, what you're going to get, that high school boy, if you can get him, and he's got a lot of talent, and you can train him, and his makeup is good and all. I mean, you might do better there, but I think it's a matter of opinion. Some organizations will go in for the college boy, and others might lean towards the high school boy, but I think their talent and natural ability and makeup and all, I mean, I think that's who's the best. I mean, I don't think it's any hard, fast rule myself.
What was your biggest disagreement, perhaps, with the front office over signing or not signing a player?
I guess when I was in Milwaukee, it was my agreement. Dalton and I were good friends, and I worked with Dalton and had a lot of respect for him and all. But there was a boy, pitcher, left-handed pitcher out of Tampa, Florida, named Myers, that they were trying to take. And, of course, I was a supervisor in the area, and I didn't want Myers. I wanted Spires. And, we had a disagreement over that, Spires and Myers. And what happened, the Orioles took Myers before we did, so we didn't have a chance of getting him. We got Spires, who went to the big league and played on Myers, didn't do nothing. But anyway, that was probably my biggest disagreement with the front office right there.
So you were with California for about 5 years.
5 years, yeah.
And then mm-hmm. Dalton went to Milwaukee.
And then went, no, I went from California to Milwaukee.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 5 years in California.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're with Milwaukee today.
Right.
You're still mm-hmm. part-time.
So. Part-time, yeah, right.
Have you signed anybody recently?
Well, no, I don't. I mean, the last couple of years. Right now, I got about five boys playing in the major leagues that I was very instrumental in getting. I was more or less the supervisor and all, and had a lot to say about
sign them and actually go and sign myself. I never done that, I mean, but I would go to the meetings and we'd have a meeting and these are the boys that I wanted and we got, they're in the major leagues right today.
Oh, can you mention some of their names?
Well, it was Gary Sheffield was one, quite a star. Rick Spires, he's with Houston. Averro is with, I think, the Cubs. Vaughn, San Diego.
Great Vaughn.
Great Vaughn, yeah, had a lot to do with getting him. And it's one of them, it's five of them, Great Vaughn. Oh, Dan Plesak, the left-handed pitcher with the, I think he's with Toronto now. But them boys, we go to the meeting, and I had a lot to do with getting them signed. I'm getting them drafted where we did, because I was I was a supervisor then. But that, and let's see. I got a voice. See, I run an amateur ball club too. It was Cargan's, Leone's, Johnny's, one of the top amateur clubs in the world. We've been to York five times.
Currently.
Yeah, right now. And we got boys in the major league right now for that team too. Reggie Jack's not a major, Reggie Jackson did play with that team. So did Al Kaline. But right now, guys are playing the major league off of that team. Shuey from Cleveland, Hamilton from San Diego, Gomes from the Phillies. I think there's four of them pitchers, and these guys could all throw hard, and we were lucky to have him. Todd Jones, he's a reliever at Detroit. But these guys played for this team, and of course, if it hadn't been for the draft, I'd have probably signed him. But they were playing for me. But see, the draft, somebody else drafted them.
So they were all from the Baltimore area then?
No, we bought them from out of town. They came in from out of town and played here. But they played here. They were in this team, which I say was one of the top amateur teams in the world. We played in a Rotterdam tournament for about four times over in New York. We've been to New York five times in the last 10 years. And then we still have it. They had this team in the past year. It was called Corrigan's this past year. But, If I hadn't been for the draft, I'd have probably got some of them boys.
What kind of advice can you give for a young scout just starting out?
Well, one advice what they gave me, and I thought it was good, don't try to run before you walk. Because sometimes you go make a lot of mistakes, and it ain't that easy. And I think if you do your job and make all your reports out, work hard, working hard make up for a lot of mistakes. I know it told me that, and I believe it now. But don't try to think you know it all either, because there's a lot of other people who already know something too. I say young scouts, the main thing is to work hard and try to look for ball players, and don't depend on the bureau. You do what a lot of scouts depend on the bureau, because to see what happens, the bureau returns and reports. And then you're supposed to go out and look at these players, see what you think. That's fine. That's good. The Bureau does a good job. But I don't think there's enough Bureau scouts to cover everybody. So you got to go look some, do your own thing, too, and try to find ball players, not just depend on the Bureau. That would be my advice.
How does the Bureau work?
Well, the Bureau, they go out. They got scouts in different areas. And he's got a pretty good size. Very lot of these scouts have. And they go out and see players, and they send in a report to the Bureau, and the Bureau in turn returns reports to your club. And your club in turn sends the reports in that area to you. And you're supposed to check them out and tell them what you think of these guys, whether you like them or don't like them, where you would draft them or how good they are.
Do all major league clubs use the Bureau?
I think so, yeah, today, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Any particular funny or unusual stories you run across in your scouting career?
Well, some of the funniest things I've had in my scouting career probably is when you have triad camps. You really get some characters come in these triad camps, and that's probably some of the funniest instance we've ever had. I had a triad camp over here at Spring Grove Hospital over here in Catonsville, and we had 400 boys there from Baltimore. It was an open triad camp, and we had some characters in there, and we had one was a patient there, and I didn't know it, and he was a patient at Spring Grove. It was a lot more people there then than it is now, but anyway, he was a patient, and a young boy was, I guess, 20 years old or so. He came down on the field, and I didn't know he was a patient, and of course he was very uncoordinated, and oh, I thought he was going to get hurt. And I told him, I said, look, you better, we told him, you better go back and stay, or you're, we're cutting you, you better go back and set up in the stands and send, or leave. And he said, well, let me tell you something. He said, I'm a nut. He said, I live here. So yeah, we couldn't get rid of him. But anyway, I was one, but we had a lot of funny incidents in triad camps especially.
You mentioned about 400. Is that a typical amount?
No, that's a typical amount in a triad camp is about, I'd say, 80 or 90, and that's a pretty good gang. But it just happened that we had that open tryout camp, and everybody came in there, and I had about four or five people help me at the time, and we did the best we could with a two-day tryout camp.
Who is the best scout you ever met, or not necessarily work with, but, you know, in your time?
Well, that's a hard thing to say, I guess.
There were several up here, isn't
there? Yeah, but the fellow, older guy, played with the Yankees, Babe Ruth's roommate for 5 years. I thought he was the best as far as judgment and baseball knowledge. His name was Fred Huffman, and he was with the Orioles for quite a while, and he was responsible for some good, pretty good ball, but Boog Powell was one that he got down in Florida. But Boog, Fred Huffman, they call him Boots, I think it was, but he was Babe Ruth's roommate for 5 years. And he used to sit down there, and we had a place down there. I went to Thomasville, Georgia. That was a minor league camp. And I had a room there, the Bird's Nest room it was, where the scouts all sat around all night and talked about Babe. And he would tell stories about Babe Ruth. And I was just a rookie scout then. And I'd sit there all night and listen to him.
Any particular story stick out in your mind?
Oh, he would talk about Ruth doing all kind of crazy stuff. I mean, drink a case of Coca-Cola and eat a dozen hot dogs between doubleheaders and stuff like that. He said, and Ruth was, he told us that Ruth was a very generous guy. He'd come in a restaurant, the team would be there, most of the team, and he'd pick up the tab for everybody, and told us that Ruth and Ty Cobb were bitter enemies, things like that. And he would go in and tell stories all night, and I'd sit there and listen to him. But then he was one of the, Joe Branzell, too, was a good scout, the fellow out of Washington, D.C., late Joe, he died last year. Joe was a good free agent scout. They were probably two of the guys I was impressed with a lot.
When you looked over a prospect, was there any particular one thing you looked for?
Well, one thing I always look for is size. There are little guys, but they're exceptions. Most of your ball players are big guys, percentage-wise. 90% of them are 6 foot and over, big guys and big, strong boys. That's what the first thing I would look for. And, of course, as far as a pitcher, you have a good arm and different things. A position player maybe outside of catching first base, some running speed, and things like that. Coordination, first step, quickness in a position player, I mean, different things at different positions you would look for. I mean, shortstop, of course, good arm, first step quickness, and things like that.
How about a player's attitude? Were you able to do anything with that? Check.
That's hard to do. It's hard to do, but you try. You know, well, that's important. It's hard to do. Sometimes you can see it, and sometimes you can't. I mean, that's very important, but it's hard. It's hard to find out different things. I mean, you might, like a college coach or something, might tell you something about the boy, but maybe him and the boy just didn't
hit it off.
And so you got to be careful. That, too. It might be some personal thing there.
Other than a scout, who in your career, who would you say some of the top people in baseball for judging talent?
Well, for judging talent now, not for what the job they've done. Dalton's the top man. He's the best for them. He was the best executive I've ever, and of course he was the executive of the year. So, and he's the smartest man I've ever been associated with. But as far as talent, judging talent, and when not a scout, there. That's a hard thing to say because, I don't come in contact with that many people in that capacity that you're talking about. I don't know offhand. I mean, as far as a person that's not a scout would be the best judge of a town, I don't know. I couldn't answer that too well.
Now, in your traveling as a scout, you probably would run into other scouts, maybe even at the same location. Was there a particular way to handle that, or because obviously you're probably competing for possibly for the same person?
Well, the only thing, you know, you go by when you're scouting like that, you're going to meet other scouts and all. You try not to tell them anything they don't know. In other words, you keep your secrets into your own, but you're thinking to yourself. Unless you, if they already know it, well, sorry to talk about that. That's how I always felt. But if I wouldn't tell them anything that they didn't know, unless they were real good friends of mine, and I didn't believe in that. But most scouts get along pretty good together. They don't have any problems.
Do you keep in touch with any ex-scouts or ex-players?
Yeah, I keep in touch with some players too, and not too many. Ex-scouts, not too much. I mean, the guys that, most of the ex-scouts I've been associated with are dead. But I keep in touch with two guys once in a while.
What do you think the major big difference is with baseball today as, say, 30 years ago, 35 years ago?
Well, I think the boy, we're talking about the boy today, his makeup and his desire to play and all. I think the boy today will work, but you got to get him to work. You got to tell him to work. The boy 30, 40 years ago would do things on his own and try to improve himself. One of the biggest things of the boy today, I mean, as far as a player, he has too many diversions. Maybe 40 years ago, he was more dedicated to baseball. He has a lot of other interests today that will take him away from the ball field. They take the ball game with you and try to figure out some of the mistakes and things, how to improve yourself. If you tell them to do things, they'll do it. But you got to tell them every day. I think that's one of the biggest things in a boy. Baseball today, I think the boy 30, 40 years ago was more mentally tough than the boy is today. Most of them. There are some boys today are pretty tough in their approach to the game, but not as many. I think I don't think they're as tough as they were, the boys today, as they were 40, 50 years ago. That's my thinking anyway.
And in your career in baseball, who would you say are some of the top players you've seen?
I've seen?
Well, who do you think? You've probably seen them all, but who do you think are the very top?
Well, Ted Williams. Of course, Babe Ruth. I've seen Babe Ruth. Jimmy Fox. I thought the best shortstop I ever seen was a boy played right here, Mark Belanger. He died just recently. The top pitcher, in my opinion, would probably have to be I don't know. Top pitcher would be worse than I've seen a lot of good ones.
Your top two or three?
Lefty Grove would be one of them. Lefty Grove. I guess. Guy pitching today, Maddox. I mean, the Oriole pitchers, I can go back and look at them, of course. Probably the top pitchers I've seen with the Orioles would have to be probably Jim Palmer. He's probably one of the tops. Nolan Ryan, I mean, sure. California, I've seen him out there quite a bit. But I guess that's about it as far as, you know, top pitchers. I've seen a lot of them. I guess getting to this offhand, I mean, it's so many of them, it's hard to think of. I don't know of anything else. I mean, I guess there's other things. But baseball, it's been a religion to me. I mean, it's not been a game, it's been a religion to me. I've been managing, coaching, and scouting for, I guess, almost 70 years. I mean, that's what it's been boiled down to. I coached the Legion team when I was 18 years old, and been coaching, managing, scouting ever since. So that's been a long time ago.
Way of life.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's been good to me. I made a good living out of baseball, and it's been good to me. And I still like it. I still like the coach's team. I think it's good for me to be around these young people. I think it helps to make you think young anyway. I got a bad knee outside of that. I'd be all right. My knee's bad, real bad. I'm going to try to have an operation the first of the year. They let me do it. So we'll see what happens. Well, that's about it, I guess. I don't know what else I can tell you. If you have anything else to think of, give me a call. That's a lot to say that.